This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
It's an odd mistake, Tom. Final hour of Bob, Groz, and Tom. DePoto.
We didn't just talk to Mitch Haniger. Who was that we talked to at 1:30?
The guy that runs the whole show.
Oh, okay.
GM Jerry DePoto.
I get confused.
Yeah. Somebody got to do the Haniger sound?
DePoto.
Yeah. And again, in case you missed that conversation, we had a chance to speak with Mariners GM Jerry DePoto. That'll be up for you on the podcast page after the show at 710sports.com. Also, our conversation with the Nigerian Nightmare, Christian Okoye. Good stuff talking to him. So that'll be there for you.
By the way,
I did
go to YouTube and look. Okoye embarrasses Seahawks.
Yeah, people were texting in. Look this up on YouTube. Was it pretty good?
Yeah.
was Wyman in the scene anywhere?
If he was, he was flattened before Okoye got there.
Now he said it was 1989. It wasn't 92, the year of the great defense.
I didn't notice the date on the clip.
Well, he said it in the interview.
Okoye said it was?
He said it was 89.
I mean, I know what side of the ball they played on, and you didn't see a 92 up in the air, but you did see a tackle 75 flattening someone.
Okay.
By the time Okoye got there, and then he did kind of bulldoze over everyone else.
Seven people.
Yeah, I counted seven.
And he's running the wrong way.
And it wasn't very far either.
Right. He said
it was
they were
about
right
a 10-yard run
yards.
Or something like that.
Yeah, usually a running back highlight.
And then... So he tramples all these guys, and he gets into the end zone, and they try and pull him down finally, and can't get him down.
Even in the end zone?
Even in the end zone.
He's still just a pillar.
He kind of relaxed, tossed the ball, and no.
Man, that is what makes – you think about Marshawn and his run.
So I don't think Dave was technically trampled in that video.
That's what makes it great.
All right, well, that's good. That's good, unless he was on the bottom of a pile somewhere.
Well, I'm going to ask him, but I think he may have been – the guy smashed before he got there.
He didn't even have a chance for a call.
I'll show you during the next break, and you tell me.
All right. We'll see if we can find him. I know he had giant shoulder pads.
Yep.
Those were back in the days when everybody...
92 is easy to find.
Did he have a neck roll, too? Did he play with that?
I didn't see a neck roll on him when I looked at him.
Wyman?
No.
We're talking about Wyman.
Oh, Wyman. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, though.
I felt like that was a linebacker thing in those days. Huge shoulder pads and the neck rolls.
He might have.
Which you don't often see these days. But anyway. All right. So it's the halftime show here. We didn't have a chance to do it at 1:30. Again, we were speaking with Jerry DePoto. But what we open the show with, and we do this every day typically at 1:30, bring you up to speed on what we talked about in case you can't tune in at the beginning of the show. Talked about the Mariners following up an absolutely brilliant night all the way around for the team with a night that got off to a good start. Wade LeBlanc gave you five innings, gave up one run, didn't walk anybody. I mean, he's your fifth starter who you pick up, late in the when the season starts. He's not even on the roster, so you bring him in. And
it's just his second start, too.
Yeah,
and you brought him in, and he had pitched in the bullpen, so you're already kind of pressing him into duty. And he was great.
He was probably more than what you – well, I don't know about more, but he threw 70-some pitches. Oh, no, that was in his other start. 58. He threw 58. He threw 70 in his first start. Mm-hmm. Yeah, threw four innings. But he gave you a chance to win. He gave up one run. You were up 2-1. Felt like it was going to be that, all right, this is going to be a close one, but it's going to be a win. Nicasio comes in, gives up double, 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 double. I mean, he just got battered pillar to post in there.
In my opinion, it wasn't one of those bad losses. You didn't play poorly. Nicasio had a bad game, obviously. You were 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. You're hitting .300 normally with runners in scoring position. D. Gordon was 0-for-5. That doesn't happen. So, you're going to win 60, you're going to lose 60. There are bad losses, ones where you're, geez, man, they didn't play well, that sort of thing. I didn't view this as one of those.
Yeah, watching Nicasio last night, I think it was just scary to think that he can get hit that hard that quickly. But as far as the type of game you should win, you know what, Bob, just in thinking more about it over the course of the show, even with Wade LeBlanc pitching well for five innings, if you know it's only going to be a five-inning start, even if it's really great, and your team's only scoring two runs, I don't know that I'd call that a game you should win.
I felt like they were set up
to win.
I felt like
they might. Sure, they were at that point. Yeah.
Well, they're up 2-1, and you bring in, and you got your bullpen set exactly the way you want it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm just not there with you guys on the bullpen. If it's Diaz, that's different. But
it is how it's set up. It is how you have it set up. You have Nicasio come in and start the inning with a lead, and then leading into Diaz. I mean, that's all I'm saying is that it was set up the way you wanted it to be set up.
Yeah, and you got what you needed out of Bradford and Vincent.
Definitely.
They kept you in the game.
Bradford's been good.
Bradford went two-thirds of an inning, gave up one hit, walked one, struck out one, but didn't give up a run. And then you had Nick Vincent go an inning and a third, give up just one hit. He walked one, struck out one. And then the wheels came off.
Yeah.
Nicasio, a third of an inning, five hits, four earned runs.
I know that it's the way, or they had it set up the way they wanted, but the bottom line is their bullpen just isn't as good as some other teams. That's all. I mean, if you had a better option than Vincent or Nicasio or even Bradford, and there are other ones around the league, you know, you'd take them. That's all. I'm just not that comfortable with those guys yet. I don't think that they're a lights-out bullpen. I think they have the potential to be.
Yeah, they've been, for the most part, they've been very solid. This has been a pretty – I mean, at one point they hadn't even blown a lead this year, right? Wasn't that the stat? Or was it they had a unique stat on them where you felt like they're not electric, they're not dominating, yet they had the stat that said, yeah, they go into – you know, as soon as they come in, they hadn't given up a lead. I can't remember what it was. Somebody will text it in. But, yeah, listen, I agree with Groz. It's not the worst thing in the world. You're going to lose games. It's what happens. But it's just you look at it and go, okay, you felt like you were in a good spot because – You can't count on a great performance out of Wade LeBlanc, and that's no disrespect to him. But
I'm starting to feel like I can for at least four innings.
Yeah, well, I think you got better than probably what you'd expect. Five innings, one run, no walks, three strikeouts. Mm-hmm. I like it. So you feel good. He left with the lead. Feel like, all right, the first two guys out of the bullpen kept him off the board. You're liking, all right, hey, we're going to go to Nicasio, then Diaz will come in, and we'll clean this thing up and win the series.
I think the difference between scoring three runs and scoring two runs in that situation is enormous, because that would have given Service a chance to go out there and get Nicasio before it got totally out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a huge a two-run lead as opposed to a one-run lead.
Yeah, it was a bummer. But, you know, listen, this is a team that's still five games over 500. They're two games back of first place in the division. They're right in the thick of it, and they're going to need to stay that way because of what we talked about with the wild card and what's happening with the Yankees and the Red Sox. And
Yankees are insane. They're like 18-1. The last 19 games are 17-1 or something like that in the last 18 games.
Is Stanton
and they're getting guys back.
I was going to say, is Stanton hitting?
Hit two home runs yesterday.
Okay.
Or day before yesterday.
Because he started off pretty slow. They're striking out every at bat.
They've won eight in a row, nine of their last 10.
Yeah, I was talking to my father on the phone yesterday. He was saying he's having more fun watching this Yankee team than he has probably since the late 90s.
I mean, the Red Sox started.
Who's that, your dad?
My father, yeah.
Your dad's a Yankees fan?
Yeah.
Red Sox started 17-2 this year.
I know.
And they've lost the division lead in May.
With a team that's winning every single game, it's going to be, you know, it's not
hard
to
But it does look
happen.
Like two 100-win teams there.
Could be. Yeah, pretty close anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, Giancarlo Stanton, he hit one home run yesterday.
Two the day before?
He didn't hit one yesterday. It was the eighth. He hit two.
Yeah.
Two on the eighth. Yesterday he was 1-for-4. He's still hitting on the season 237.
Yeah, but that's going up.
We had a little bit of news on the skipper here. We didn't say that on the air, right?
No, we did not.
On Scott Service, that he's going to be missing two of the games this weekend because of his daughter's graduation. She's
getting her
master's
degree at Ole Miss.
So who's managing the team then? Is that
Manny Acta?
Manny Acta.
Is he going to wear the swelmet?
He's the Acta manager.
The Acta manager.
It'd be great if he sat there in the swelmet the whole game.
I think it would be, too.
It'd be awesome to see him go out to the mound with the swelmet on.
You know what, though? It won't be as fun if they're losing to the Tigers and he's wearing that helmet.
No, it won't.
It could take some of the sting out for comedic relief.
Well, if he puts it on afterwards, yeah.
Hey, love to see him walk to the mound with that thing on out there for a meeting and he's wearing that.
It'll be the last time he'd be acting manager or Acta manager.
Oh, there you go.
We're going to let Mel handle the next one.
Hey, so there was a story we didn't get to. Can I get to it?
What?
Nick Collison.
Oh, yeah.
Retires after 15 years. Now, a couple of interesting things about that. One, the same organization for 15 years. Now, sure, that's true for certain guys in the league, but usually you're a star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For a guy who's been a role player for his career to play 15 years with the same team is A, impressive, and B, he penned a letter to ESPN, a retirement letter. I'd like to share a little bit of it with you. Our coach, Nate McMillan, was old school. I learned how to take a hard foul and lunge off a screen. I learned how to be a pro for 82 games. I struggled at times, but by the end of the year, I had a place in the rotation and played well in the playoffs. Key Arena was loud, and the city was with us. I absolutely loved it. I love Seattle. I've spent every summer there since I was drafted. I love being a Supersonic. I hate how it ended there. I had four coaches in my 5 years, and then Howard Schultz sold the team to Clay Bennett. The fans knew we were gone. They stopped coming, and I don't blame them.
Wow. That's awesome that he still has that kind of reverence for the city.
Yeah, you see him in Queen Anne in the summer.
Yeah, because players don't have to care about that stuff publicly. He didn't have to say that.
Not 15 years later.
Of course not. After all this time, I mean, that's terrific that he would say something.
Yeah, I thought
like
so
that.
Too.
I think Durant would probably say something similar.
I think he has a couple times.
I mean, he's represented. He's worn Sonics gear. He's talked about it. That's why I always felt so conflicted in hating the Thunder and wanting bad things to happen for Clay Bennett. Yeah, I wanted to see him lose, but I didn't have anything against the players. I rooted for them to do well. I wanted Durant to succeed. I wanted Collison to succeed. But, you know.
Well, right now, in theory, the last sporting event at Key Arena is going to be Kevin Durant playing basketball before they demolish it.
What do you mean?
Build a new arena. They're having the Warriors exhibition game.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
So, and that I believe they're hoping that's going to be the final sporting event at the Key.
Before they refurbish the thing. Well, that'll be a good moment. That'll do well there, by the way, don't you think? That thing will sell out in 2 seconds.
I don't know about 2 seconds, but it'll probably do well.
I think it'll sell out.
Probably.
I think people here, and I don't mean you, Grez, specifically. But
a lot of people like me, Tom.
There are, but there's enough.
We're still harboring a grudge.
But there's enough to fill that building that aren't. That are still into the NBA.
For an NBA preseason game, we'll see. But I agree, there'll be a good crowd there, and yeah. Durant will be cheered.
As he should.
I agree.
Yes. As he should. Because he's done as much as you could expect a guy who's playing in another city, another team, essentially, to do and say and support. I mean, he's been vocal. I root for that guy.
But definitely kudos to Nick Collison. That's a hell of a career, man. 15 years.
Career. So, I saw something. The only guys that are in the NBA now that wore a Sonics uniform are Durant and Jeff Green.
Jeff Green of the Cleveland Cavaliers, I believe, now.
That's it?
Yep.
That's it. Russell Westbrook was the last Sonic drafted, but he never wore the uniform.
Okay. Man, can you imagine if those two had been here together?
Well, and then they drafted James Harden the following year.
Yeah, they would have had basically the same success that Oklahoma City had in the
Oklahoma
early part
City,
of the
Oklahoma City in their third year, fourth year there in the NBA Finals. Mm.
It's as talented a team. Well, I won't say as talented a team as we've ever seen, but that's a pretty talented threesome right there.
Sure was.
Yeah, you throw in Serge Ibaka, you throw in Collison, and well, I mean, you had guys who were just solid players outside of superstars. That's a good squad right there. So there's a bit of what we talked about to open the show. John Clayton of the John Clayton Show does a podcast every week. Is it every week or every couple weeks?
It's every week.
Is it every week? Okay.
So it's a lot of booking for poor Moore to do, in my opinion.
Well, she gets paid off by being a regular participant on the John Clayton Show.
She's essentially a co-host.
That's her payoff?
Weekdays, 10 to noon on 710 ESPN Seattle.
There you go. There you go. But I believe his latest edition features Joel Corey of CBS.
Yeah.
And they were talking about contracts, you know, the Matt Ryan contract that was signed, the Aaron Rodgers contract that's going to be signed soon. Everybody's anticipating and speculating the dollar value because then it trickles down to who's next in line of the big name quarterbacks. And Russell Wilson is that guy. And Joel was on that podcast. And here's what he said as far as what he thinks Russell Wilson may want when it becomes his time.
Yeah, last time they put him right under Aaron Rodgers. Because of the franchise tag dynamic, which didn't exist last time, and also Russell Wilson had not made any real NFL money as a third-round pick, now that he's had one big veteran contract, he could afford to play hardball a little more. So I think they're going to have to go above Aaron Rodgers in order to get any type of deal done with Russell Wilson on a long-term basis.
Above Aaron Rodgers.
Again, though, it's not really about whether or not he's better than Aaron Rodgers.
He'll be the highest paid guy for a year.
Exactly, and then somebody else will.
Yeah.
It's just timing is all. We know how that works.
Think the Seahawks will do that? Do they go above? Let's say, so Ryan's at what, 30 a year?
30 average? Million, 150 million for 5 years.
100 guaranteed. So a $30 million a year average, and we can all focus on that number, but it's the guaranteed dollar amount that people are – the players and the agents are attached to. You can say it's worth up to 170 or up to all incentives. You play it out completely, all that good stuff, but it's about the guaranteed part of it.
Yeah, what if they just guaranteed more money, but it was...
What if the Seahawks are 6-10 this year and Russell Wilson has an off season?
He's just terrible?
But not just terrible, but just doesn't have a great year.
It'll seem terrible, though, if he's anything less than what he normally is.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm wondering.
You let that in? I mean, because you've got the track record of success.
Yeah, he's been at
great
that point,
performances.
Much more good than bad. You got
no
one
doubt.
You'd look at his bad, and I guess it'd be the reasons why, right? If the line's bad, and if he's just bad on his own.
But I mean, he's played behind. You'd have to say he's bad on his own because he's played behind bad lines.
Yeah, but maybe there's a breaking point for the number of hits you take.
Well, if he gets hurt, that's a different story as well. But that would also impact it.
But what are you suggesting, that would make them offer him less?
I'm just curious.
Free agency.
I'm just curious. What kind of impact would that have? Do you think would they'd pay less? Do you think they'd just shrug it off?
I actually don't think it would have any, because they believe in him.
Unless they believed, hey, he's damaged goods on some level because
you mean health-wise?
Of hits. Yeah, if they believed, hey, he had a terrible year, he took a beating, and he's not physically the same guy. It'd have to be something like that, because I agree. I don't. There's just too much of a track record of success. Even behind atrocious offensive lines and zero running game, he's still been able to produce. So if there's that would be the outlier, the bad year, the subpar year.
Just, I mean, the problem is the timing of it.
Yeah. Wouldn't be good for him.
That his bad year came
right before his contract negotiation.
Yeah. Be good for them if they wanted some level of leverage.
I was just going to say, because what other leverage do they really have right now?
They don't.
They don't have any.
They'll say, hey, you asked for too much money. This Magoo kid's ready to jump in.
The franchise tag is their leverage.
Yeah, but.
Well, speaking of that, here's what Corey had to say about avoiding the whole Kirk Cousins type of thing.
Well, the thing is, the agent's going to evaluate what. There's a number. There always is a number. There is a number for Cousins. The Redskins just botched how they approached that. But Mark Rogers and Russell Wilson will have a number in mind. Here's what it's going to take to get me to forego the year-to-year process like Kirk Cousins. And I suspect to buy out that whole process, you're going to have to put that number way out there. Because they know that they wouldn't franchise him a third time, because you're over $50 million for the third franchise tag. So it would really just be 2 years. You go year-to-year, make $65, $66 million, and then you put pressure on Seattle to make him the highest-paid player at that point. Or they can project it out early. There's a number that'll get it done, but it's going to be a number which Seattle's going to have a hard time swallowing.
Can I make a prediction, by the way, for John Clayton tomorrow?
What?
First thing he's going to bring up when you bring this up is going to be that Russell's got a baseball agent.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
Is that still a thing?
That would be.
I guarantee you that'll be the first thing he says about it.
And that means what? It's an impediment. He doesn't get how it works in the NFL. What does that mean by bringing that up,
Bob? I encourage you to ask those questions.
All right,
and to stay on them.
Just demand answers.
Yes, demand answers.
You think that'll be addressed in the John Clayton Show tomorrow?
I guarantee it. If we bring up Russell Wilson's contract, his first response will be baseball agent.
Can you imagine that? Okay, but he talks about Russell and his agent coming in with a number that could avoid that whole situation with a franchise tag. I just wonder, is that going to be a number that the Seahawks couldn't even entertain? Is it unreachable, completely undoable for them?
You'd have to think his agent, even though he's a baseball agent, would have a clue as to, all right, listen, we can throw some ridiculous number out there. It's never going to be met. Let's start dealing in reality.
Right.
Here's what we think legitimately what we're worth here. Now there's going to be some negotiating, right? They're anticipating a middle ground. Here's the number we're going to throw out, but we're really willing to play for this number. But here's the one we're throwing out.
Right.
And the Seahawks for the same thing. They'd probably say, well, here's what we had in mind, when they're really willing to step a little higher and reach this. So hopefully there's a midway point for both of them. I don't think they come with something just nuts off the wall unless they just want out of here. Well, you're not going to pay it. We're gone.
I wonder who else would be a baseball agent, though, Bob.
Baseball agent doesn't get it.
You know what, though? If he wants to try that, if he wants to go into test free agency, what other team is out there that's going to pay him that money that he wants to?
The Cleveland Browns, after Baker Mayfield becomes
a
flop.
After he's a bum? All right. Well, you want to go there? Sure.
No, I don't know everybody's salary cap situation, who's going to be in a position to pay that kind of money. It's going to be a small group of teams. But
if you were the Browns, and let's say we were currently in, or we just got past Russell Wilson's contract year, and he was a free agent this year, would you have rather signed Russell Wilson or drafted Baker Mayfield?
Personally, if I were in charge of the Browns, I'd look at Russell Wilson. He's a proven commodity.
You know what you're getting.
He's not old.
Plus, you can use the other draft picks to get young players you don't have to pay.
You know exactly what you're getting. Whereas Mayfield, or any quarterback for that matter, whether you drafted Darnold or anybody else, Rosen, you have no idea. They could turn out to be studs and your quarterback of the future, or it could be like a long line of quarterbacks you brought in before, a bust. So I will always take the sure thing in that situation, especially as you brought up his age.
Even if it costs you a ton of money.
Yeah.
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 What's the point of having money if not to spend?
Exactly right. One more from Joel Corey talking about Russell Wilson, and he says, just don't let him hit free agency.
I would have tried to make a preemptive strike and get Russell out of the way before free agency started, before the Cousins deal. Obviously, that can't happen. So I don't think they're really going to do anything until we may, this time next year, after the 2018 season, going into his contract year. I think that's when there'll be negotiations in earnest. And there's another wild card you gotta factor in the equation. Philadelphia, they do deals really early with Lane Johnson, their first-round pick a few years ago. They did that deal before they even had to exercise the option. It's after 3 years, first time you do a deal for a draft pick. If Carson Wentz comes back and is anything close to what he was before he tore up his knee, they're going to try to get that deal done really early. So you'll have that out there, and Russell Wilson will have enough ammunition to go, I should make more than Carson Wentz. I wouldn't be surprised if they made Carson Wentz the highest paid player in the league over Aaron Rodgers, and then you got another additional layer in the equation as well.
Bottom line, it's going to cost a boatload of money.
A lot of equations, a lot of layers, yeah. And a lot of dough.
Lots of dough. That's the message. One certainty in all of this, is he's going to make a boatload of money, which he's already making, but even more. On this deal, whether it's with the Seahawks or anybody else.
Keep drafting well, John.
Yep. Let's hope this Magoo kid's got something going. How about him?
Somebody did text in and ask if Magoo plays well, if there's any chance. You can't do that.
No.
Can't do that.
He's a long shot to make the team.
Yeah. Right. And you're not going to see him in a game, barring an injury. You're not going to know if he plays well in a game, right? I mean, he's going to play preseason, and that's where that'll end.
Right.
So... All right, there's a bit from Joel Corey, who's the guest for John Clayton on his podcast, so check that out at 710sports.com. We heard a little bit from John Smoltz earlier in the show talking about James Paxton. He had a few other things he said we want to get to when we eavesdrop next with Bob Gros and Tom.
Bravo Golf Tango, the line is in. It's time now for the eavesdrop.
It is time for the eavesdrop here with Bob Gros and Tom. It's where we take a listen to something somebody said somewhere about stuff. Today, that somebody would be the one, the only, John Smoltz.
Man, he talked for a while today on Brock and Sock.
Was he?
Well, there's there's like 800 cuts in there from him today.
Well, maybe everything he said was incredibly interesting.
I guess so.
Maybe
that's
Justin Myers
it.
Came back and did all the cutting.
Oh, yeah. He was a big Braves fan, right?
No, he was a big Smoltz John fan. Smoltz fan.
Well, he's a Braves fan, too, naturally.
Yeah, but that was not...
That seems secondary.
He was a John Smoltz fan.
It was more
really?
Of a man crush. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He big was time.
A big man crush on Smoltz.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. It's money well spent. So we pulled a couple of things that he had to say. Just talking about the game in general. Earlier, we played you some cuts of him talking about James Paxton. He's talking about the game of baseball being a little bit odd right now.
Look, it's been a strange year, and it's been a strange couple of years with the way baseball is going and the lack of balls that have been put in play and the amount of no-hitters already and the threat of no-hitter almost every night. So, to be a pitcher right now with the way guys swing and the way they do not alter their swing and the philosophy of hitting a baseball today is unlike it's ever, ever been.
How do we get there? How do we get to this point where it's a strikeout or a home run?
Analytics.
No matter who you are. Really? That's what analytics has led us towards?
They've led us to believe that strikeouts are much less punitive, that they're not nearly as bad, right? It's become somewhat of an acceptable stat, whereas before you were ripped for, you were criticized. It was something you had to adjust. You can't...
I think analytics are accurate, but I don't think they've made the game better.
If everybody in your lineup can hit home runs, then you're right. It's not as punitive. But... Mm-hmm. Most teams don't have those kinds of lineups. You've got guys who
that
can,
lineups that what that hit
up the top to bottom. Oh, everybody can hit home runs.
Right.
It's not that way, nor should it be. And I agree.
But the days of shaming Adam Dunn for leading the league in strikeouts are gone.
But you know what? Adam Dunn could also hit for power, like mammoth power.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a guy who hits 20 home runs and strikes out 130 times, that's not good. That's not good enough.
I agree, but the philosophy has changed. The way people approach it, the way they view it. Smoltz went on to talk about a weird stat that baseball is on pace for.
If you don't change philosophically what you're trying to do at the plate, then I think you're going to be stuck in this kind of time frame where we're on pace for 10,000 more baseballs not put in play this year than the year before. That's just unbelievable. As a pitcher, your chance to expose that is greater than ever. And as an organization, if you want to win a championship, you cannot win a championship striking out 14, 15 times a game. You just can't. But if you want to win a championship from a pitching and defense standpoint, then you can expose those strikeouts if you got the right guys on the mound being able to do what they can do.
But nobody wants to pay for pitching because everybody's worried about health long term.
Yeah.
Well, Houston's paid for pitching. So, right?
Yeah.
For Verlander, yeah. So far it's worked out for him.
But you got to build your staff so it's truly top to bottom. It's with your starters 1 through 5 and your bullpen and your closer to be able to pull that off, because most of these guys aren't going past 6 innings. So if the great pitching ends right there, you're dead.
Do you need to have great pitching though if that philosophy is truly intact across the league, where we just talked about strikeouts aren't looked at the same way, that they're not as punitive, and he's talking about the lack of adjustment that's being made from the hitter standpoint. Do you need to be an elite Justin Verlander type of pitcher to expose that? I don't think you do.
I don't know, man. I'm pretty confused by this whole thing. I just don't get it. I don't get why analytics tells us that this is the best way, or this is the best way to build your team. I just don't understand it. I don't understand how you can have guys striking out as much as they do, and then on the other side have pitchers who can't go past 6 innings. I mean, where are we headed here? Do you guys understand?
Specialization.
I don't really know how it's come to that. Listen, there are a lot of these analytics, a lot of these saber stats that I look at and go, I have no idea what the hell that's telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Pitching is not so much an analytics-driven thing. Analytics have not driven the changes in pitching.
Come on, spin rate.
Well, pitch count.
Live arms have, pitch counts have.
That's not a saber metric.
But, right, the fact that you don't grow starters to throw more than 100 innings anymore. You carry 8 pitchers on your staff, 8 in your bullpen. I mean, that's sort of driven that. And maybe they'll go to six-man rotation. Maybe that's the next step. Maybe it is just going to be guys going 3 innings at a time.
But what were you saying, Bob, that even a pitcher who isn't all that great can still amass?
I think you can expose that weakness. The guys are going up there hacking, or they're taking whatever the reason is that they're striking out more often now, right? Whether they're taking pitches or they're just up there hacking. I don't think you need to be Verlander, Paxton, Kershaw to expose that.
Obviously you don't. I mean, you got all kinds of guys can strike out double digits now. I think
you got Marco Gonzalez striking out everybody.
Smoltz's line is that if you have those elite pitchers, though, you certainly have the edge when you get into the postseason. Right.
Without question. All I'm saying is, when you know, in response to your question, I don't think you need the Astros rotation. Certainly that helps. It makes it even more damaging to the opposition, but I don't think it's a necessity to expose the weakness that he's talking about. I don't think it's necessary to have 1 through 5. These guys are the best of the best.
Tom and I were looking at Tony Gwynn's career the other day, and the year he hit 390, he struck out 15 times.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. And it was 110 games, but still, I mean.
The following year, he had 577 plate appearances and struck out 14 times.
That's just mind-blowing.
And hit 340. And I think, what were the numbers against, like, Glavine, Smoltz, and
three
Maddox?
Times.
He struck out 3 times.
He struck out 3 times in 287 at-bats. Yeah. 287, actually not even at-bats, plate appearances.
Yeah.
He struck out 3 times.
There's no one even close to being like that anymore in baseball.
That's almost an all-time outlier, because we looked at Ted Williams, too, who was also pretty darn low, but he wasn't.
Well, but he was a power hitter. I mean, you know, if you look up at some of the other average hitters, you'd see that, you know, guys who were slapping the ball around and weren't necessarily hitting for power weren't striking out much. Power hitters is where Ted Williams, you know, you have a guy who hit 40 home runs. And he had the fewest strikeouts. I mean, Joe DiMaggio, I think, struck out 6 times one season. And he had 35 home runs, 40 home runs on a regular basis.
Those are the outliers.
Yes. Those are the super. But just compare them to the superstars of today.
Right.
And the numbers are dramatically different.
You know what I was thinking about in addition?
Stanton's going to strike out 200 times this year.
And nobody will blame.
And hit 50 home runs.
Isn't he close now?
It feels like it.
I was looking at Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz last night. I was just thinking about this. I think that if you were to rank those three guys, they're all great, obviously, but if you were to rank the three of them, you'd probably do it in that order, right? You'd say Maddox was
first.
The best.
Yes.
I think I'd go Glavine, Smoltz after that. Maybe you'd reverse that. But I think.
What about Avery?
Yeah, well, for a little while there, Avery might
pretty
have been
good.
Better than all
he
of
had a couple
of
decent years.
But I think if you needed one great start for one, like a game seven or a wild card playoff or something, I think I'd go with Smoltz over the other two. Smoltz was just better in the postseason.
By the way, Stanton's got 54 strikeouts so far this year.
In how many games?
He's played in 36.
Yeah, that's about close to 200.
How many times Maddox? Do you think Maddox would have struck him out?
Maddox wasn't really a strikeout pitcher.
No,
for that
matter. He wasn't.
Smoltz was. Smoltz would have been. You know, how many times would Randy Johnson be doing today?
Striking people out,
even more so.
Racking them up. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to sum it all up next with Bob Gross and Tom.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Gross and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
All right, I've got the answer to a mystery here.
Which mystery would that be?
I texted Wyman to ask him about what Akoya did to him.
Okay.
He said, no, Tom, tell him I kicked his blank every time. No. He said, the fact is that they actually wrote about it in Sports Illustrated, how he ran me over one time. When I met him in person, I was hoping that he was going to be a real
jerk.
but he was actually a super sweet guy, which made it worse for me.
He wasn't in that play then. I didn't show you that. I never showed you the video of that play, but that wasn't Wyman.
Okay, but he did run him over, obviously, and it was written about in Sports Illustrated.
Right, probably Peter King wrote about it.
Yeah, Wyman was pancaked by Christian Okoye, who's the nicest freight train out there on the field.
Do you think he apologized on the way over those seven guys? Like, sorry.
Boom. Oh, crush, that looks crack, like it hurts. My bad. Crunch. My bad.
Hey, we're going to be an NHL team city here pretty soon, and you got a game seven tonight. Just wanted to throw that little reminder out
there.
Who's
in it?
The teams with the two best records in the NHL, Nashville and Winnipeg.
Is Vegas already in?
Vegas is waiting for the winner of this particular game. It's in Nashville, and I would like to suggest, as I did on the John Clayton show earlier, heard 10 to 12 on 710 ESPN Seattle, that if you have a chance to watch the game, watch it on CBC. CBC still does what most people don't do anymore for good reason, which is they give you the arena experience. They will go right before the national anthems, and they'll do both national anthems are played. They'll go to the arena, no commentary, and give you the feel of what it feels like. And I think we could all agree that seventh game basketball, big fight, things like that, there's nothing quite like the feeling in the building right before that big event happens. And I salute them for still going back and doing it kind of old school and giving you the sense of what it would feel like. Nashville last year played in their first finals. They played against Pittsburgh in the Stanley Cup Finals. They had like 75,000 to 100,000 people in the streets
That's
watching the game.
Insane hockey
which
right
will be
now.
The same thing in this game. So
it's in Nashville?
It's in Nashville. Okay. It's game seven. It's been a fantastic series. Both teams are really, really good, and it'll get you excited about hockey coming to town in 2020.
And this is for the right to get into the finals?
Right to get into the Western Conference Finals. Las Vegas, who, by the way, Seattle should be operating under the same rules that Las Vegas operated under, and I think that's going to change sport in terms of expansion teams when they come in from now on. Game-winning goal, so they're there because of him.
Just goes to show you, man, you put a winning product in any town in America, any town in this country, and it'll work.
Yep.
Because in they haven't been there in Nashville that long, right? Like 20 years, maybe?
I think so.
Has it been that long?
15, 20 years, something
tops.
Like that.
They've had eight straight years in the playoffs. Last year was their first year in the finals. And
right, but that's now known as a hockey city.
They will flip to the shot of Winnipeg, which will have 18,000 people in their arena watching the game, all dressed in white.
Are they going nuts in Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's become the hot ticket in Vegas.
Hmm. Man, unbelievable. So the Golden Knights are a series away from the Stanley Cup Finals.
They were 500-1 to start the year.
God,
how close were you to placing a bet on them?
I wasn't close at all, man. No expansion team's going to the finals.
I wonder if any
you wouldn't
team
put a 10 on that. Just
should have.
I wonder if anybody in Vegas though, the one city
I
where
I think
they're from,
lots of people in Vegas put $2 bets down.
Right,
on,
they said, "Oh, we got
not?
A team. We'll throw $2 down, $10, whatever."
It's $1,000.
If Seattle gets a team. Don't you think more people around here might think about doing that exact thing?
Except they're not going to be 500-1 if they have the same expansion rules.
But maybe they'll be 100-1 and you lay down $10.
Yes.
Yeah. I could easily see tons of people like, what is it, $10, $20, I'll do it.
Right, it doesn't matter, I'll just do it.
Yeah. But game sevens in the NHL are fantastic anyway, 9 times out of 10.
How many players?
And this series has been a terrific, terrific series.
By the way, people are texting in, Ovechkin didn't score that goal, he had the pass.
Okay.
Morons.
The assist?
Yeah.
And then they misspelled morons. I love it. That's great. You call people a moron, you misspell it.
Good job. Know from having watched most of this series now who the best players on both of those teams are? Or does it matter?
It doesn't matter that much if you're just going to watch, if you haven't been watching it.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter
that much. When I watch hockey, I feel like the star factor doesn't matter nearly as much as it does.
Now, the way lines change constantly and things like that, you can get a sense of it
pretty
by the third period.
Yeah.
It'll be cool.
What time is it? 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock?
I believe it's at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, Christian Okoye and Jerry DePoto, for joining us on the program. If you missed anything from today's show, go to 710sports.com, click the podcast button, and scroll down to our picture. Click on that. You'll find everything you missed waiting for you right there. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob Gross and Tom.